All right, good morning, everyone. As Mr. Evans has instructed us to get back on the clock, we'll get started. To begin, I'd like to see if there are any objections to today's agenda from committee members. All right, so the agenda is approved as presented. Next, I'd like to request the committee members' approval of the minutes from our November 16th meeting. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Thank you. Second? Jack, you want a second?
Second, I'm sorry.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, any opposed?
Second, vote for it, I'll do everything.
He's not representative district.
It's Corbett, I'm not on that committee.
All right, you want a second though, Mike?
Second.
All right, thank you. All in favor?
I'm just a...
he was the first one I saw. All right. All right, so before I turn the floor over to Dennis today and his team, I'd like to outline the items we'll be covering today. First on our agenda is to authorize the public outreach and hearing process for the fiscal year 2020 operating budget, Metro's capital improvement program, and Metro's strategic plan. In order to gather input from the public in January and February, which will allow the board to adopt the budget in the spring, both the committee and the board need to take action today. So today's action is the next step in the months-long consultation with the public and our jurisdictional partners to develop a consensus on next year's budget. So next, we will hear from staff with information from two recent public outreach efforts, and we will be asked to approve staff recommendations on these proposals. The first of those is to update Metro's parking programs to better align with the authority's goals, as well as to consolidate all of Metro's parking policies into a single policy document. The proposed changes are informed by several parking pilot programs that you may have heard about and that Metro undertook over the past year. The second item is to delegate to the general manager the authority to charge peak fares during regional events when Metro provides peak levels of service as well. This change would help Metro recover the additional expenses associated with supporting these events. So with that, Dennis, I turn it over to you and your team to begin our discussions today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Today, staff is seeking committee authorization for a public hearing on Metro's fiscal year 2020 proposed budget. As a reminder, the proposed budget was presented to this committee just last month. The proposed 2020 budget is based on the plan to keep Metro safe, reliable, and affordable, which is KIMSRA, which Mr. Whitfield presented to this committee in September of last year. So essentially, the capital program will leverage the recent dedicated funding revenues for capital to ramp up capital investment, focusing primarily on safety and system reliability. Conversely, and again, consistent with KIMSRA, the operating budget, the base operating budget in this particular case stays within the mandated 3% subsidy growth cap, which was recently enacted by the Commonwealth of Virginia and the state of Maryland. So when you look at the budget priorities, and consistent with our previous conversations with the committee, the proposed capital program fully funds safety compliance as well as other safety improvements across the entire system. And as we'll be discussing in the next few pages, additional state of good repair improvements will increase system reliability for Metro's customers. The operating budget, on the other hand, prioritizes ridership and non-fare revenue growth. It also maximizes operating efficiency, but above all, stays within the 3% cap that I just mentioned. Some of the system-wide capital projects that customers will experience and see in FY 2020 include delivery of additional rail cars, new buses, as well as new Metro Assist vans. There will also be additional station lighting upgrades, as well as cell service extensions to the tunnels, leveraging on work that has already been done or is ongoing with respect to our underground stations. Finally, the fiscal year 2020 capital program will also fund rehabilitation and replacement of station platforms, some of which were discussed with the committee this morning. Parking garage improvement, elevators as well as escalator replacement at stations across the system. Overall, Metro will invest $1.352 billion across 6 investment categories in FY 2020, with stations and passenger facilities being the largest investment category, both in FY 2020 as well as during the 6-year program. As we stated last month, this graphic shows how Metro's FY 2020 operating budget was developed. It starts with Metro's FY 19 operating subsidy, which is then adjusted by 3% to cover inflation and other cost increases, including the collective bargaining agreement adjustments. Following that, the budget then adds new costs for mandates as well as capital projects that are legislatively excluded as allowable costs above the base. In fiscal 2020, the allowable above the base subsidy has 4 components, which are listed on the slide here, including ramp-up costs for Silver Line. As a reminder, the proposed operating budget for next year does not increase fares or cut service. Furthermore, it promotes ridership and customer engagement with more competitive prices, passes, a weekend flat fare, unlimited bus and select pass, and new visitors passes, all within the 3% cap. Above the cap, the proposed budget recommends 4 new initiatives to the committee, all of which are designed to grow ridership. Again, all of which are listed on this slide for the committee. So, following the presentation that the general manager made to this committee, there was an expression of to add additional proposals to the docket. Those include phasing in or scaling back on some of the initiatives, charging peak fares during additional rush hour service, or implementing a 4% across the board fare increase. Any or all of those that the board wishes to the committee wishes to add to the docket will require a motion and approval by the committee. Assuming committee, as well as board approval of this resolution, the next steps in the budget process include a capital program work session on January 10th, followed by public hearings on the budget based on the docket that this committee and the board approves, which will then lead to formal committee considerations of Metro's FY 2020 budget in March of 2019. With that, Mr. Chairman, staff recommends approval of the resolution authorizing staff to conduct a public hearing on the proposed budget. That concludes my presentation, and I'll be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Dennis. Remembering that our goal for today's meeting is to authorize a public outreach hearing process, so really what we want to focus on, if there are any comments, are changes to what we would like to present in that public outreach hearing known as the docket. So, any comments or questions? Mr. Dorsey.
So with that in mind, Mr. Chairman, I would like to propose a change to the docket, which I thank you, Mr. Anasicki, for previewing, and it would be to amend the docket, and I'll tell you exactly how. Oh, you actually all have it at your desk. but this would be to, with the general manager's proposal to increase the peak service offered in the morning by an additional 30 minutes and in the evening by an additional 90 minutes, it would be to have a corresponding charging of peak fares so that it maintains the principle of you provide peak service, you charge peak fares, and that's the amendment that I would offer for the docket. Look for a second.
Oh. Okay. May I have a second to that?
Second.
Okay. Comments? Additional comments? Mike.
I guess the only additional comment is that I will be opposing this addition to the docket, as I've read in the media in the last day or two. My colleagues from the district are proposing to engage in a jurisdictional veto of any fare increase in the FY 2020 budget. My colleagues from Virginia have also stated their opposition to a fare increase. This is essentially a backdoor fare increase, the first of two we will consider this morning. And since the will of the broad majority is to oppose a fare increase, I think we will oppose a fare increase as well. And since this is a backdoor fare increase, since it would raise fares on people who are under the proposal by the general manager on these expanded hours, it would effectively be a fare increase. I'll be voting in opposition to that.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, maybe perhaps having not spoken to it, I didn't explain it so that there's a misinterpretation. This is not a backdoor fare increase. It's following current policy that when we provide peak service that we charge peak fares. So if, you know, if there was no proposal to increase service, there would be no corresponding amendment to increase, to extend the peak fare hour. So it's really factually incorrect to characterize it as a backdoor fare increase. You may not like it, and I can appreciate and respect that, but that's not an appropriate characterization of it.
No, I mean, to be fair, we can engage in a dialogue, but essentially someone traveling at 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the evening who's now traveling in an off-peak period pays an off-peak fare. Under your proposal and the general manager's proposal, that would become a peak period. So that person who might be paying $3 now could end up paying $4 or $5 because he would be on a rush hour train. So that's a fare increase for that individual.
Okay. There is another option not to increase the peak service levels as well. Right? So it's not just one or the other. Any other comments, questions? Okay. All right. So, with that having been said, there is an amended proposal, right, from this committee. Okay. So I'm being corrected. We need to do a motion on the original amendment at this point, right? Which is to put this recommended budget forward for public hearing. So may I have a motion to do that?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All right. All in favor of that?
No.
Nope.
No.
Okay. Now we're doing the amended
now
motion.
Now we consider the amendment.
Okay. May I have a motion to for the amended
now you've motion? You've got an emotion for the amendment. You made the motion. And
I didn't make the motion.
Well, you have to.
He made the motion. I seconded.
Okay.
He can renew the motion. I can renew the second.
So, all right. So all in favor now of the amended motion? Okay. All in favor of the amended motion suggested by Mr. Dorsey.
The amendment.
Just the amendment.
The amendment
suggested by Mr. Dorsey. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Technically don't have a vote.
Oh, yeah, I'm not on this committee. I forgot.
Okay,
sorry.
So all in favor?
This is budget committee. Everyone gets a vote.
Okay. All right, everyone gets a vote.
All right, everybody gets a vote.
Participation vote. Everybody wins. Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? So that was three in favor, one opposed?
So everyone votes on this because it's a
all
budget.
Board members vote on this.
It's a budget item, so all members can vote on this. Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Six, I count. Right? All opposed. Is that an opposed?
No. So 7-1.
I was yes.
One.
So 7-1. Mr. Goldman is opposing. Okay. So the amended motion passes. All right. Thank you. All righty.
Am I official? Any other amendments?
Any other amendments or comments on this motion? Thank you.
Now we go back to the main motion. Have amended.
All right. Now we go back to the main motion as amended. All in favor of the amended motion?
All in favor say aye.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Everyone.
Aye.
Yeah. All right. Opposed? All right. This is abstentions. So it's 8-0. Okay. Thank you. Dennis, thank you for that leadership.
Congratulations, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I may need to step down after this. All right. So next, what is our next action? We are now going to talk about the parking program. Okay? So Nina, who I understand that you recently saved somebody from a massive injury and you hurt your arm?
I did. I sacrificed myself for the betterment of others and dislocated my shoulder in the process.
Thank you Goodness. For your heroic service.
And the real story will not be told in public.
Did it involve a shared mobility device?
Let's please not discuss this anymore, because otherwise I will turn into a public service announcement. I could be the next safety contact. Don't text and walk.
Please.
Okay, great. After a long process, actually, of really trying to understand what the opportunity is to drive revenue from our parking portfolio without impacting transit riders. We've been conducting over the past year different pilot programs. We've been looking at amending and recently approved our use regulations that allow us to have commercial activities on our parking lots. Now this is the culmination of all of our findings over the past year and our recommendation of what to move forward with and permanently adopt and what not to move forward with. So today we're asking the committee, to advance three approvals. The first is the approval of the Compact Public Hearing staff report. I will take you through sort of what the agenda items that we brought to the public are. Acceptance of the Title VI equity analysis that relates to several of the proposals that we've made. And then lastly, and I think actually this will be a great service not only to Metro staff but also to the public and anybody else that's really trying to understand what our parking policies are, is to comprehensively consolidate all of the board's past actions and policies vis-a-vis parking into a single document, so it's much easier to read, track, and understand what this organization's position is on parking. So we're asking for authorization and, in some cases, amendments of Metro's parking policies. So here's the full summary of the parking proposals that we've been trying to advance over the past year. We presented six of those at the Compact Public Hearing. The first is that we brought to the public a proposal to expand hours of revenue collection on weekdays. And that was tested as a pilot program, which started in February of this year and continues even today. We also wanted to test expanding hours of revenue collection on weekends. And that, frankly, was the proposal with the most interest from everybody. We proposed adding a regional event fee on weekends if there wasn't support for full-time revenue collection on weekends. We offered that as an alternative to the public. We would like to expand special events, which is a non-rider program system-wide. Right now, it's only authorized in three locations. We want to introduce new parking technologies as an option for how people might pay for parking rather than only having the option of coins or credit cards or Smart Trip in many cases. And then lastly, we brought to the public a proposal to update the fee structure for multi-day parking. And then lastly, this is being brought to the board for approval, but did not require a presentation to the public, is lowering parking rates at Landover and West Falls Church to $3. That was a pilot program, and we'd like to permanently adopt that. Over the year, and it started really a year ago, December of 2017, we started doing communication and public outreach, and that was in the form of surveys with our parking customers, and then in preparation for the public for the compact public hearing, we issued more than 54,000 brochures and surveys. We did an entire ad campaign in multiple languages, did signs at our parking, you know, a lot of signage at our parking facilities. And then we held an open house and public hearing on October 23rd. We collected feedback in all different kinds of forms. The most popular was the online and paper surveys. We had four people testify at the public hearing, and then we also received a number of written comments. So I'm going to go through the proposals relatively quickly. On extending weekday hours, most people said, a majority of people said that they would continue to park even if we started revenue collection as early as 5 a.m. Currently, revenue collection is authorized at 9:30 a.m., and then during the pilot, we lowered the gates at 7:30 a.m. As part of our data collection and what we understood that morning parker to be, only 1.3 of those morning exits were our transit riders. That means the vast majority of people who are leaving the parking lot that early in the morning before 9:30 are non-transit riders. They're parking typically in our lot overnight and then leaving. So our recommendation, because this does not impact the transit rider, but it is a great source of new revenue, is to go ahead and authorize and delegate to the general manager the right to set revenue collection hours and to start as early as the opening of the Metro Rail station and close as late as 1 hour after the Metro Rail station closes. This proposal to collect revenue on weekends and federal holidays was the one that generated significantly the greatest area of interest from the public. Very strong opposition, 60% said that they would not park on weekends or federal holidays if the daily rate was changed. This, of course, is actually not a surprise. We anticipated that. So we also took a look at the data. How did introducing parking rates on weekends impact our ridership? So on the positive side, we collected $950,000 when we only charged $2. So we collected that in new parking revenue. However, on the ridership side, on the fare revenue side, we lost $970,000. So introducing, even at a $2 rate, a parking fare really impacted our riders and was a net loss to Metro. So we are not proposing at this time to incorporate full-time a weekend or federal holiday parking rate. So we're going to leave that off the table. I will point out a couple exceptions because it will impact what our proposal is. We looked at what the parking revenue from non-riders on weekends was, and it was 56% of all of our parking revenue. So because the non-riders are being charged $8.95 or $10, a very small number of people are actually generating a majority of the Saturday parking revenue. So in practice, what we would like to do is authorize revenue collection hours on weekends and federal holidays, but for non-riders. So lower the gates, and if you're a transit rider, you would tap out when you're leaving, and you would be charged zero. But if you're a non-rider, you would have to pay when leaving the parking facility. So that's just a nuance that still generates revenue for Metro without impacting the transit rider. The other opportunity that we really see and that we would like to have the board approve is a carve-out for weekends and federal holidays during regional events. There was one regional event in the 10 months that we did the pilot, and that represented 8% of all Saturday parking revenues. So between the non-rider revenue, which represented 56% of all Saturday revenue, plus this 8, the non-rider and the regional events equaled 64% of all of our Saturday revenue. So we would like to preserve the right to charge up to the daily rate during regional events, even if they take place on the weekends and federal holidays. And actually, the board right now has already authorized that up to 5 days per year. But in this case, we would be requesting that the general manager is delegated the authority to determine when an event is a regional event. Special events, this is a little confusing to folks, is different than a regional event. Special events are really events, and I'll just use the obvious one at FedEx Field. There's an event that's close to our metro station. People want an alternative place to park because maybe the rate is more competitive. And so we've already authorized at College Park, Largo, and at Morgan Boulevard to do a special event fee. And this can go up to $25 a day. This is for non-riders, people who aren't riding the transit system. They get charged $25 a day. It's a benefit to them because it's cheaper than the alternative. So we just want the authority to apply this system-wide. From a public response and input perspective, we only got 5 public comments, 4 were positive. So there's no objection to this. So our recommendation is to delegate to the general manager to apply the special event fee system-wide. And I think this becomes even more important as we start engaging more in leasing out metro parking facilities during the weekends for farmers markets, for holiday, for festivals, for all those kinds of things. Again, they would not be riding the transit system. They would be participating in a local event, and we would want to be able to charge. We would like to introduce new technologies. Even pay stations is a new technology. Things like Park Mobile, Mobile Now, these are all ubiquitous across this region, and it provides convenience to the customers so that if they don't want to use their credit card, they just want to use an app, they can do it. Frankly, for our Kiss and Ride customers, it improves compliance. Customers love having the autonomy to charge up, you know, to extend their parking so that they don't get a ticket. So it's a benefit to them. It's also a benefit to us because it allows us to collect more revenue. So it's a symbiotic relationship to be able to offer different kinds of ways to pay for parking. We let the public know that if we offered this service, there would likely be a little bit of a convenience fee. So Park Mobile, for example, you might pay on average 25 cents more on top of what the street parking rate is to have that convenience. For those customers that are concerned about that 25 cents, we will maintain the current forms of parking payment so that if you want to continue to avoid, you know, any kind of convenience fee that these technologies would require, you could still pay with coins or cash. So we are seeking board approval to use new parking payment technologies when appropriate. Multi-day parking, there's only a few locations right now where we offer multi-day parking. As you remember, we do not authorize vehicles to park more than 24 hours consecutively at our Metro Rail parking garages and lots. This would allow us to extend this, to offer multi-day parking at more stations than we have now. The other thing is that we're seeking board approval to do a different payment structure. Right now, if somebody parks for 10 days consecutively, they only pay for one day, and that's when they leave the parking lot. So they only pay for one day, even if they've parked there 10 days. We would like to be able to charge for every day that they are parked. On the very first day, if there is a non-rider fee at that station, we would like to charge the non-rider fee for that first day of parking. The reason we're asking for that is because we want to avoid people parking in the multi-day parking lot who are non-riders to avoid paying the non-rider fee in the regular lot. So it's really a management, it's trying to manage people who might want to fraudulently park in multi-day parking. And then lastly, On this, again, people, the majority of the public was in favor. And then lastly was lowering parking rates. We did not bring this to the public for public comment. However, the data supports permanently putting these lower rates in place at these two stations. We lowered the rates to $3 per day at very highly underutilized stations. And the results were pretty interesting. Parking transactions increased for an average of 25% from what they had been before. But what was most interesting is where those gains were had. We did not attract significant new riders, people who had not been riding the system before. But what we did do was convert people who were riding maybe 2, 3, 4 days a week to now ride more often per week. So what we actually saw was an increase in our existing ridership, take transit more often during the week. So our recommendation is to authorize a $3 daily rate permanently at Landover and West Falls Church Metro stations. And I will say, going forward, what we want to do is treat all of the daily rate discussions and have those debates during the budgeting process and in the tariff publication process. So we're in a systemized routine of looking at the parking rates comprehensively during that budgeting process rather than off-cycle. The reason we're asking to authorize it now off-cycle is because we don't want to confuse our customers at Landover and West Falls Church when the pilot ends in December by popping back up to the previous rate and then proposing during the budget cycle to lower it again. So that's why we're proposing this off-cycle. The Title VI equity analysis affirmed that there is no disparate impact on minority populations or disproportionate burden on low-income populations for these proposals that impact the transit rider. An equity six title analysis was not done on those proposals that are purely non-rider proposals. It's not required. So our recommendation is to approve the Compact Public Hearing staff report, to accept the Title VI equity analysis, and to authorize and or amend the parking policies to reflect the results of the public hearing and consolidate all of our parking policies into a single document, a comprehensive document. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina, for that report. So after some coaching, I want to say there's a reminder, only the committee members now will be voting, not all board members. So I move acceptance of the parking public hearing staff report and approval of changes to the parking program. We all board members voted on the last amendment. Only the committee members are voting on this one.
And that is because, just to be clear on the
It's a finance matter, not a budget matter.
All right. Okay. So I move acceptance of the report, the staff report, and approval of the changes to the parking program. May I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Any discussion?
Just briefly to compliment the staff, this is a thoughtful analysis, I think long overdue, and pleased to see the results.
I have some comments, if I have standing to make
them. Let's go around first, because I have to make a, I have to
as you like.
Make another amendment to this motion, please. So any other discussion about the motion? Okay. So I would like to move an amendment on this, and I'd like to read it because we've now made an amendment to the written piece that you have in front of you. So I'd like to amend the parking policy found as attachment C to the resolution of approval of the parking programs. The first will stay the same. So the GM shall notify the WMATA Board of parking policy or rate changes derived from authority delegated or authorized in sections 404A and 404B through the budget process.
That's changed.
Am I reading the wrong one?
Yeah, unfortunately it's been superseded.
All right.
Why don't you take that one?
All right, let's take this one then. How about the second one? Does that stay the same? I'll be with you in a second. Okay. So, section 201 of the policy is amended by adding the following at the end of the section The GM shall notify the WMATA board 60 days in advance of adding a new station to the non-rider marking program. And secondly, the policy is amended by adding the following at the end of that section. When technologically and operationally feasible, WMATA shall implement a system to exempt Metro bus riders and rail riders to accommodate Purple Line riders at the appropriate time of the local transit systems operating in WMATA transit zone from the non-rider rate. May I have a second to that amendment? Discussion.
Just to clarify, the intent of the amendment was that as it's currently framed, it would provide for this notice for Metro bus riders and local rail riders. What I asked the Chair, Mr. Corcoran, if we could add the language and rail after bus, so it reads bus and rail operated by local systems, so that it embraces the Purple Line. And as one can imagine, when that system comes online in probably 2022, Purple Line riders may want to park at White Flint or Grosvenor, take the Red Line train to Bethesda, where they would then connect with the Purple Line to go across to Silver Spring, College Park, or New Carrollton. And so this amendment accommodates them in this policy as well.
Agreed. And the First Amendment is the intent is to make access for all mass transportation users to take advantage of this. Okay. So, any other discussion? May I now have a committee vote, right,
yep,
on the amended motion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Passes 4-0. Thank you all. And now,
back to the main. Yeah,
well, you still have to do the motion.
On this motion, or okay, so now we have to approve the main motion, right?
Yeah.
So, all in favor? Okay, opposed? None? 4-0.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we want to discuss charging peak rates for peak fares, correct? Dennis.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Our last item six, committee approval of various activities related to charging peak fares for regional events. And as this committee knows too well, Metro moves lots of people during regional events. But the key thing is that those events typically require additional resources from operators to customer service agents to additional police officers, even more trains and power utilization, all necessary to accommodate the additional ridership demand. So in the last 3 years, Metro has responded to these events, including the Papal visit, obviously the Independence Day celebrations every year, presidential inaugurations, the Women's March, March for Our Lives. In the new operating environment that Metro is operating or will be operating in beginning in FY 2020, Metro needs to recover as much of its cost as possible in order to stay within the 3% cap. But as a reminder, I just wanted to make sure that it is clear that the peak phase during regional events only applies to Metro Rail. You know, bus remains flat at $2 per trip. And as required, staff conducted extensive outreach. In this case, in conjunction with the activities that Nina described a few minutes ago, in order to solicit feedback on this specific proposal. In total, Metro received, with respect to this particular item, 4,600 comments. A majority of whom indicated they will continue to use Metro in spite of the proposal. And as Nina indicated earlier, there was also an equity analysis which found no disparate impact, as well as a finding of no disproportionate burden on the low-income population as a result of the proposal. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we recommend in committee acceptance of the report and approval of the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. So I move approval of the peak fares for regional events as presented. Is there a second? Steve, second. Discussion. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. I did not support this proposal when it came before the committee a few months ago prior to the public hearing. Nothing has transpired in the intervening month or two for me to change my mind, and as I put it out, this is essentially the second backdoor fare increase that we are considering today. Very odd, since the majority doesn't want to consider a general fare increase. But let's call a spade here. We're talking about people who are going to travel down to the mall for the 4th of July, or are going to travel to the mall to express their First Amendment rights in the Women's March or some other exercise like that, and they're going to be charged probably an additional $2.15 for their trip. So for a family of four coming down to the mall for 4th of July, they're going to be charged $16 more than they're paying now to come down to celebrate on the 4th of July. Now, very frankly, it seems to me that our objective as a transit agency should be encourage people to use Metro Rail for holidays and to come down for March. And effectively what we're doing is the opposite. We are going to encourage them to take their cars and try to drive down and just cause a lot of congestion on interstates and highways to try and find a place to park downtown in D.C. to celebrate the 4th of July or to come down if they're on a march. Second of all, I would point out that this increase is not very focused. It's not just going to hit people who are coming down that day. If you're trying to travel to Reagan National on that day of the march, you're going to be charged peak fares, even if it's a Saturday. If you're going to work somewhere in the district, if you have to work somewhere at a bar or a restaurant downtown, you're going to be charged peak fares for that day. So this is not just narrowly focused on people who are coming down. This is going to affect everybody who has to travel on Metro Rail on those particular days. I guess the third comment I would make is that the justification for that is that it's to provide for peak service in off-peak times. Yet one of the largest off-peak increases of service happens through the baseball season when people go to the Nats game, and the system seems to put on extra trains for that. Yet we're not proposing to charge Nats fans like me and Jack and others who ride Metro during those so-called peak times an increase in their fare. So this is kind of an odd duck here. It's clearly a fare increase, and I think if we're being consistent with our objectives, we ought to oppose this. Finally, I should point out that there's nothing here that indicates what amount of revenue is going to be recovered by this kind of proposal. So we're essentially engaged in a fare increase for a particular segment of our ridership, segment of our ridership that we should be encouraging to use Metro Rail. And by this action, we're going to encourage them to drive down to D.C. It's totally ridiculous. It makes no sense at all. And I think we should vote it down. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Mr. Price.
Yeah, Michael, we need to stop talking about a backdoor fare increase. This is not a backdoor fare increase. We're only confusing the public when we make these kind of comments of this nature.
Price, it's a fare increase.
Well, let Mr. Price.
If you're traveling that
Mike,
day,
Mike,
you're going to pay twice. You're
Mike,
going to pay
Mike, nobody interrupted. More. Mike, nobody interrupted you.
I'm sorry.
Let Mr. Price finish.
Thank you very much. So, you know, we need to stop confusing the public. We are not having any general fare increase, period. End of that. So, you know, this talking about backdoor fare increases, that's really a little, I don't want to use the word disingenuous, but it's problematic at best.
Steve.
Just in terms of making sure the public's clear about what's going on, at peak fares or non-peak fares, not one of these passengers is being asked to pay the full cost of what it requires to provide the service. Local taxpayers are subsidizing that ride at a peak fare or a non-peak fare, and the responsible allocation of that subsidy is what we're here for. Thanks.
Comments from other board members? Okay, so we have a motion to accept this recommendation on the floor, and committee members are to vote on this. So, from the committee members, all in favor of the motion, aye. Opposed? All those in favor? All right. Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. So the motion passes 3-1. Okay. So with, okay. With no further business to come before this committee, we stand adjourned. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, David, you've been waiting patiently.
Thank you.
To make comments.
So, I have just a question with respect to parking. For when are we going to undertake a bona fide market test of the value of the agency's parking system under a long-term concession? We received a report from an outside consultant that, in my view, was unsatisfactory, not well diligenced, and not put forward by the best in the industry, in my opinion. If you look at the just perform a back-of-the-envelope calculation of the value of the 60,000 spaces that comprise the parking system of WMATA today, we're sitting on an asset worth perhaps $740 million, or as much as $900 million, which would be payable up front to WMATA. And my concern, reason I'm raising this now, is that there are a number of elements of the proposal that was just approved by the committee that frustrate the realization of that value for the account of WMATA. And I would like to emphasize my desire for management that when adopting policies of this kind in future, it consider whether or not the policies are appropriately staging the asset for a possible disposition pursuant to a long-term concession. The numbers I'm throwing out are based on comparable transactions that have closed in the market. The terms of these agreements are fashioned in a way to protect the public interest. This is not a privatization, but a species of financing that public sector owners of infrastructure are undertaking with increasing frequency in the United States. The fact that we have applied a Title VI fare equity analysis to the proposed fare increase signifies to me that we did not use legal diligence to determine whether or not that requirement applies in view of the need of a concessionaire to escalate parking prices under the concession. I think that that position by itself potentially sinks the possibility for this agency to realize multiple hundreds of millions of dollars off the back of a deal, and it signifies to me that we haven't kept our eye on the ball. Would you like to respond to that commentary?
Did you have a comment, Corbett?
Yeah, I actually agree with David over this particular situation here, having served on a major university board where we firsthand achieved this in terms of monetizing the parking concession. It was a tremendous windfall for us, and we are a not-for-profit organization as well. So I strongly encourage you, we need to take another look at that. During these tough times when we're asking for more money from various jurisdictions, we're going to have to look inward to ourselves and see how can we raise capital to offset additional subsidies going forward.
Thank you very much. My response to your observation is that as a general proposition, you are right that those assets can benefit from a private sector organization and management. That said, the last time the committee reviewed this, staff was given some time to optimize those assets before approaching the market, which is the process. And the activities that Nina described today was one of those steps necessary to get those assets, and as well as the maintenance of those facilities to allow them, the markets, to approach those assets in a more economic way. With respect to the specific provisions, including the Title VI analysis, obviously, as you know quite well, those will be part of the legal construct on the back end, and to the extent the role that this board will play in terms of how much flexibility you want to advance to the operator would determine the economic value of those assets. The points you've made this morning are certainly accurate with respect to the extent we burden those assets, it will impact the economic value, but I'm not sure that those are all transferable when that is done by the external party.
So optimization of the asset, or staging the asset for a transaction, includes taking positions on applicable federal law that optimize value, that introduce certainty to bidders about the profile of revenue of the asset. Making the profile of revenue of the asset subject to confirmation of no disparate impact or disproportionate burden in the sole discretion of the Federal Transit Administration, when there's a colorable question whether that application, whether that rule applies to this element of the system, will absolutely chill interest in a transaction. And that's really sort of a technical legal determination taken without information to the board of its consequences to a strategic decision. Another step that was just approved, which again diminishes value of the parking system, is the approval to implement new fare payment media. Bidders on the asset will not want to be prescribed the kind of electronic fare media they don't want to take over what you've just installed if they think you can do a better job.
The presumption that these constraints would transfer to the private sector is not accurate. Those will be a new construct, and which will be approved by this board. But currently, you know, we're required to take these steps as long as those assets are still being managed by the authority. I think I hear you say that, you know, that there's an argument to be made for not applying those current rules, and I will defer to party on those.
Say that again?
No.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments? With that, this meeting is adjourned.